A scientist and a poet might seem like an unlikely pair to write movies, but when Joyce Quarrington and her late husband Bill began to collaborate, their stories took on three dimensions. Joyce and Bill's screenwriting career transported them from New Orleans to L.A. and back again, into post-apocalyptic worlds on page and screen. In this edition of NOLA Life Stories, Joyce's narrative begins during her time as an engineering student at Rice University in the 1950s.
I was walking through the lounge one day and Bill saw me and said to his friends, "Oh, who is that?" And they said, "Oh, that's Joyce Hooper, but don't mess with her, she's weird." So since I went and got on the elevator to go up into the library, he ran up the stairs and we were together thereafter. He was a poet and when we met at Rice. He had actually struck up a friendship just by mail with Charles Bukowski, who's become a very well-known poet. And they corresponded back and forth, and I kept the correspondence, and it was really a wonderful correspondence. They were each writing these long letters to each other, back in the days when people wrote letters.
Anyway, it was 2 or 3 weeks later when I got this letter from William saying that he did enjoy my reading. He was a true gentleman.
Well, we just were living over in Defunct Estates at the time on the North Shore. And the phone rings, and this person says, "This is Roger Corman." Like, we're supposed to know him. Well, we're not movie buffs, so we didn't know him. He was quite a well-known producer. And he said, "I think you have a cinematographic imagination. Would you like to do a movie script?" So then he knocked out a draft and sent it to Roger. And Roger called him up and said, "Have you ever seen a movie script?" And Bill said, "No." He said, "Usually they're about 120 pages. You shoot about a page a minute." And his was like 220. So again, I had to cut it down. Because for Bill to cut his work was like taking flesh and, not just blood, flesh and bone. So I edited it down and we began working together on that. And he was working on a project at the time with the producer Walter Seltzer and Chuck Heston to do a Mega Man.
"Because the last man on Earth is not alone."
Well, then I became much more of the plotter. We would go over to Charlie's Steakhouse and have a bottle of wine and discuss plot, and I would come home and I would write out a long scene outline of what should be there. And then Bill would do this wonderful dialogue. He could create characters with dialogue just beautifully. So we thereafter became known as science fiction writers. And therefore, we began getting offers to do science fiction stories. So we did The Last Battle for the Planet of the Apes.
"Out of the Forbidden City," they roared, "to settle once and for all who had the right to rule the planet, ape or man."
And so the producer, Arthur Jacobs, bless his heart, he had done the first one, was proud of it, done the second one, blew up the earth at the end of the second one because he didn't want to do another sequel. But it was so successful, the studio said, "We don't care if you blew up the earth, you figure out how to get around it, we want another sequel."
The battlefield, a dead city 12 years after the ultimate bomb has been dropped.
It was a weird surprise thing to create something out of your head and then people run around and bring it into existence, you know? I mean, that's really pretty weird. I don't think any movie we saw were we thrilled with the production when we saw it. We had no input. Writers are not important to movies. And so they never had much influence on what gets actually produced. And we would turn in our script to the producer, and then a year or two later, we'd see the movie at the local theater. Planet of the Apes, they had somebody rewrite it so that we have a statue crying tears about the future. I was like, "Oh my God." So you'd cringe. In fact, we asked our agent, "Should we take our name off that?" He said, "No, it's earning money. You never take your name off anything that earns money."